John Woolman. He was born at Mount Holly in New Jersey, one of the children of a small farmer, a member of the Society of Friends. We know little about John's early life, save what he has written in his remarkable journal. Although almost uneducated so far as schooling was concerned, he has left in this book one of the simplest yet most impressive pieces of English writing to be found anywhere. As he grew up, he started work on his father's farm, using the evenings for reading and improving his mind. But being frail in body, he found farming too great a strain, and became instead bookkeeper and assistant to a baker. He attended the Quaker meetings, and soon there came on him a sense of the terrible evil of slavery. A small incident started him on the road that led to freedom for the slaves. "My employer," he writes, "having a Negro woman, sold her and desired me to write a bill of sale, the man being waiting who bought her. The thing was sudden, and though I felt uneasy at the thought of writing an instrument of slavery for one of my fellow creatures, yet I remembered that I was hired by the year, that it was my master who directed me to do it, and that it was an elderly man, a member of our society, who bought her. So, through weakness, I gave way and wrote it. But at the executing of it, I was so afflicted in my mind that I said before my master and the friend that I believed slave-keeping to be a practice inconsistent with the Christian religion." The next time he was asked by a young man of his society to write out a conveyance of a slave, he asked to be excused. The result was that the friend confessed that the keeping of slaves was not altogether agreeable to his mind either, but as the slave had been a gift to his wife, he felt bound to accept her. John Woolman could not argue with his conscience in that way. Slavery appeared to him as a dark gloominess overhanging the land, which he must do all in his power to abolish. In order to leave himself with as much free time as possible for the cause, he decided from then onward to do with the minimum of comfort, so that his energies need not be absorbed in the building up of a prosperous business. He changed his trade and became a tailor, but most of his time was spent in traveling about in the streets of the Friends, which gave him unique opportunities of drawing attention to the matter so close to his heart. As he went about the country, the Quakers naturally offered him hospitality, but he was very uneasy about accepting anything from people who owned slaves, for fear that by doing so he might feel a delicacy in speaking to them about freeing the Negroes. He was often asked to draw up contracts for the conveyance of slaves, but always declined, and in many cases he put his scruples so convincingly that those who had asked him became converted to his views, and willingly set free the very slaves they were about to sell or give to others. The quiet man was slowly winning by sheer force of character. About this time he published his first pamphlet, Some Considerations on the Keeping of Negroes. It is interesting to note that this bears the imprint of another famous American, Benjamin Franklin. Woolman's business as a tailor was on the increase, but he found prosperity a burden because it kept him so occupied that he had less time than he wished for his great enterprise, so he deliberately referred his would-be customers to rival shopkeepers. His plea for the slaves was based not only on principles of right and justice, but also on the fact that economically slavery was bad for both masters and slaves. He would point out that free men, whose minds were properly on their business, found contentment in working their best and providing for their families, whereas Negroes, expecting nothing but slavery during life, had not the same inducement to be industrious. In many cases, the slaves were not badly treated, but even at its best, the whole system was seen to be evil, and John Woolman's moderation and obvious sincerity brought conviction. Gradually, a strong feeling against slavery grew up among the Friends. Meetings began to pass resolutions against the practice, and many Friends began to free their slaves, although they did so at great cost to themselves. And all this was mostly due to a weakly man quietly and persistently pointing out what was true and right. Not with burning words of fire did John Woolman carry out his campaign. He had none of the orator's gift of stirring men with his eloquence, yet in his own way he achieved greater results than any inspired talker. We are not surprised to learn that he cherished ideas which would be considered eccentric today. The use of dyes for clothes he regarded as a mere excuse for covering up dirt or pandering to vanity. Consequently, he had his clothes made of undyed wool, and even managed to find a hat of natural fur color. That he was physically as well as morally brave, he showed when he extended his care of the Indians as well as the slaves. He constantly spoke against the practice of trade method by which the Indians were plied with rum, and were then, while in a half-conscious condition, deprived of their furs and skins for much less than their real value. And in order to understand their life and ideas, John Woolman determined to travel and live for a time among them. It was a dangerous period, for the red men were hostile to the white and were on the warpath, killing and scalping all whom they considered enemies. But John Woolman calmly faced them and the perils of flooded rivers and wild beasts. He traveled through hostile country with a single companion, sleeping on the ground and bathing in the rivers. He fell ill, and on recovering made up his mind to visit the West Indies to carry on work among the friends there. He saw at first hand how sugar was produced entirely by slave labor, and from that time gave up its use. Also, he reckoned that if it were not for trade dependent on slave labor, the passage between America and the West Indies would cost much more. He therefore refused to take advantage of the cheap rates, and for conscience' sake decided to pay more for his passage than he need have done. In 1772 he decided to come to England. It was the very first year our courts decided that a slave escaping to England was free as soon as his foot touched our soil, and that he could not be forced to return to his master. The English Quakers, too, were in advance of the Americans, having 11 years before agreed to exclude from their society any member having a hand in the slave trade. The voyage to England was a fearful experience for Woolman. He traveled steerage, not because he could not afford to pay for a cabin, but because he had scruples against paying extra money for luxuries. It is almost impossible in these days to realize what an undertaking the journey across the Atlantic was 2 centuries ago. And as for traveling steerage, it was little short of martyrdom. Yet Woolman chose to cross that way rather than pay away for a little comfort money he could use in charity. The passage was very rough and lasted 5 weeks, long enough for John Woolman's heart to break over the condition of yet another set of people, the sailors, whose life he describes in harrowing terms in his journal. As soon as Woolman landed in London, he visited the principal meeting house of the elders of the society, but so strange was his appearance that the staid English Quakers looked askance at this man in his light-colored coat and hat, fearing that he was merely some eccentric enthusiast whose behavior might be a little embarrassing. They therefore greeted him coldly. But so far from resenting this, Woolman very humbly said that he quite recognized that he could not travel about England in the interests of the society without the support of the friends, and that while they withheld the support, he would work at his trades of tailoring and shoemaking to keep himself and be a burden to no one. The humility of the man and his gentleness moved to tears many who heard him. In the result, Woolman completely won over the meeting to his side and became an honored visitor and guest. But it was not for long. In September, he fell ill at York and became rapidly worse till it was realized that he was suffering from smallpox. First, his sight went, but he remained cheerful, with his mind perfectly clear, till early in October he passed out of this world. He was buried in the Friends' burial ground at York, mourned by all who had known him, and by thousands besides who had been influenced by his magnificent courage and faith. In 2 years from then, the Pennsylvanian Quakers were excluding from membership all who were concerned in the slave trade, and later forbade their members to employ a slave. The rest of the American Quakers followed their example. John Woolman's work was done.